Very true, very true.
Good evening.
I don't care.
Welcome to the April 25th meeting of the Joint Committee on Marijuana Legalization. Today we have three different bills that we're going to be talking about.
Your supply don't last.
We're going to start by, we have a work session scheduled for Senate Bill 1057, and what we intend to do with respect to that bill tonight is have some discussion, have a presentation by our council of the elements of the Dash 23 amendment. We're not looking to move that bill tonight, but he's going to describe for the committee what the elements of the Dash 23 amendment are, and then we're going to have a chance to ask him questions. It's not set for a public hearing. That's set for us to have a conversation with Mr. Mayor. Then we're going to move into House Bill 2198, for which we have a lot of testimony lined up. We have a lot of people who are going to come forward and testify. I want to note, because I think some of the people in the room are here thinking about Deschutes County issues, which are important, and as you know, if you've been following the committee's conversations, committee members are really focused on, that there is conversation underway between people on both sides of that concern, including Deschutes County commissioners and people from local jurisdictions and affected landowners and advocates for them, legislators who are advocates for the landowners. So while I understand you may want to testify, please know that there is actually some active work underway to try to find a path forward that meets needs of landowners while also honoring the local control needs that local jurisdictions have. So please factor that in as you give your testimony. And then finally, we're going to have a public hearing on Senate Bill 874. So a lot lined up for tonight. It's important stuff. We're happy you could be here with us. With that, I'm going to invite forward Mr. Mark Mayer, and I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 1057 and invite you to describe, please, the Dash 23 amendments, and then we'll have an opportunity for conversation with the committee.
Co-chairs Lining or Burdick, members of the committee, my name is Mark Mayer, Deputy Legislative Counsel. I'm the drafter who's assigned to the subject area of marijuana. I drafted the Dash 23 amendments, which are based largely on the Dash 14 amendments, and because we've already gone through the Dash 14 amendments, I'm going to concentrate on the differences between the two. There's basically five differences. Most of them are quite easy to grasp. I'll blow through those, and then I'll talk more specifically about the tracking provisions. So the first difference between the two amendments are that sections 41 to 44, the Dash 14 amendments, have been removed from the Dash 23 amendments. If you remember, we've discussed these in committee before. Those were amendments that specifically dealt with allowing a marijuana retailer locate within 1,000 feet of the school under certain circumstances. Those have been removed from the draft, and that is an issue that is not going to be addressed in this draft or in this particular amendment. The next three are very simple amendments. Section 4, page 2 of the Dash 23 amendments. If you remember correctly, this was the section that gave a grant of power to the Oregon Liquor Control Commission to prevent diversion to unlawful sources. It has been limited in the Dash 23 amendments to diversion from licensees. So no longer the broad grant of authority that it was in the Dash 14s. It's now just their own licensees, and that's what they'll be focusing on in that particular section now. Section 31 of the Dash 14 amendments, page 21. If you remember correctly, this section was the section that dealt with the database that's going to have registrant information in it from the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act. The Oregon Health Authority was going to put together this database, and then there was going to be access to it by a variety of different agencies. In the original draft, the original amendment, the Dash 23s, the four agencies that had access were Oregon Liquor Control Commission, Department of Revenue, Water Resources Department, and State Department of Agriculture. In the Dash 23 amendments, two of those agencies have been removed. Water Resources Department and State Department of Agriculture are no longer in this particular draft, they won't have access to that information. That information is only accessible by the Liquor Control Commission and the Department of Revenue in the Dash 23s. Section 36, page 25 of the Dash 23 amendments. If you remember correctly, this section was about, it was codifying the Attorney General's opinion on the relationship between what a patient cardholder could possess underneath the Medical Marijuana Act and what households can possess under ORS 475B245, any household, whether they're a patient in the medical marijuana system or not. The Attorney General opinion said that what a patient could possess, it was in addition to and not in lieu of one another. So a patient can have six plants underneath the medical statutes, underneath the, for lack of a better term, the household statute, they could possess four plants. The Attorney General's opinion basically said that means they can have 10 plants. And we had codified that, and along with codifying that, the Dash 14s, excuse me, haven't codified it yet, but in this draft we had addressed it. Along with that, we also addressed other types of marijuana products, such as concentrates, extracts, any other type of product, and immature marijuana plants, and came up with language that said basically the same thing, that, you know, it's not in lieu of, it's in addition to. There was some confusion about what that meant with respect to things that weren't specifically enumerated in the medical program under the medical statutes. And so the decision was made to basically remove that stuff and just have that section concentrate on mature marijuana plants. And so that section now is only about mature marijuana plants, and that those two statutes are in addition to one another, not in lieu of one another. So those are the four easy things in the Dash 23 amendments.
Co-chair.
Yes, please.
Mark, could you go over the very first one? I'm sorry. The one that was before Section 4, the licensee diversions.
Sections 41 to 44, the Dash 14 amendments, which dealt with circumstances under which a retailer could be located closer to a school than 1,000 feet, have been removed from the Dash 23s.
That's that Section 93. That was in the.
That is also removed. I didn't mention that simply because that was a conforming amendment. The real substance of that was in the sections 41 to 44.
Thank you.
So the tracking amendments in the Dash 20, the tracking language in the Dash 23 amendments is in sections 40 and 41. I'm going to flip to that real quick. So two things are set out here that weren't addressed in the Dash 14 amendments. The first thing is funding, and the second thing is a schedule by which tracking will be implemented. I'll address funding last because it's quite a bit more complicated. I do want to point out that, and this is consistent in both this draft and House Bill 2198, I do want to point out that there is language that says the section does not apply to a marijuana grow site located at an address where a registry identification cardholder produces marijuana and no more than 12 mature marijuana plants and 24 immature marijuana plants are produced. So for those types of grow sites, they're not going to be subject to tracking underneath this this version of tracking or under any other tracking version that I have written and that is publicly available. So first, the schedule. It's a little bit easier to grasp this. Section 41 of the Dash 23 amendment sets out a schedule by which tracking will be implemented. By September 1st of 2017, the Oregon Health Authority will send out notice of these provisions to all the registrants underneath the OMMA, besides the patient card holders. By December 1st of 2017, those registrants, those grow sites, dispensaries, processing sites, they have to send notice back to OHA of what they are going to elect to do. Do they want to be subject to tracking and otherwise remain in the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program? or do they want to make, do we want to apply for licensure through the OLCC REC program? If they elect to apply for licensure, they must begin the application process by January 1st, 2018. I imagine this is, OLCC could speak better to this. I imagine this is because it will give OLCC time to process. The important thing to remember here is that as long as those applications are being processed and they're on file and they're not in the process of being denied, those applicants will be able to remain under the existing system until that application process is finished, even if it goes beyond the next date, which is July 1st, 2018. So as long as it takes OLCC to process the application, they'll be able to remain as a registrant under OMMA. If the registrant elects to remain in the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program, then they will be subject to tracking by July 1st, 2018. So those are the two different paths they can take. Now, the consequences of not choosing one of these two paths and then meeting one of these two standards, applying for licensure by January 1st or being subject to tracking by July 1st, is that when your renewal comes up as a registrant, OHA will not renew your registration. And so then you'll fall out of the system. Funding. Funding is a little bit more complicated, especially with Section 40, Subsection 7. I'll do my best to describe it. And this information is all on pages 30 and 31. So with respect to administrative, inspection, and investigatory costs related to tracking, those monies are going to be borne by monies that are collected as the marijuana tax underneath the REC system statutes. The Oregon Liquor Control Commission is directed to create a formulary by which they look at how many registrants they're tracking and determine the cost of performing these duties with respect to each registrant, and then sending to the legislative fiscal officer and the Department of Revenue what that amount is. How much do they need to actually perform these duties? Upon getting that information, the Department of Revenue is going to basically distribute to the Oregon Liquor Control Commission the amount that they request, except it may not exceed, underneath the draft it says $1.25 million per quarter. That's because the distributions are going to occur on a quarterly basis. That amounts to $5 million a year. So no more than $5 million a year, and the formulary likely will come under that in most instances. As for the rest of the funding, that's going to be borne by the fee payers underneath the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act. It'll pay for the other costs of tracking that are not paid for by the marijuana tax monies, except for the patient card holders. The patient card holders will not pay for, they will not pay for any of this subject matter, as well as the small grow sites, the way it's currently written. So that is how it's going to be funded, and that's the schedule set out. Those are the five differences between this and the Dash 14s. Are there any questions?
Yes, please, Senator Brzozinski.
Yeah, Mark, let's start with what you're just finishing up on the funding. I note, as you said, on page 30, lines 12 through, it looks like, 28, is this part that has that 1.25 mil per quarter. If I understand your explanation, that is going to be tax money that will actually be used to fund that portion.
Correct.
All right. Then on page 32, section 42, there's a $1.8 million to be transferred to this marijuana account, and that represents what money?
All right. Apologies for missing that or not addressing that. That's my error. The $1.8 million is a one-time transfer for startup costs.
And that money's coming from?
That's same. It's the marijuana tax
money. Tax money.
Yeah.
All right. It's not going to be coming from license fees?
No.
Thank you. That's what I have right now.
Okay.
I mean, I've got more, but I figured other people
okay.
might want to.
Any other questions, comments for Mr. Mayor?
So. If there's
please go
not.
Ahead.
All right. So back on page 30, before that section we just discussed, on subsection 6, lines 8 through 11, it talks about the commission may use regulatory specialists and defined to conduct and inspections and investigations, including inspections and investigations of marijuana grow sites located at a primary residence. That seems to be in conflict with what I thought where we were heading. Can you explain why it's here in this draft, where I thought we were saying in other areas that they would not be able to inspect? Or is that maybe this is the difference between the dash 23s in 1057 and the dash 7s in 2198?
Chairs Leininger, Burdick, Senator Przanski, you're correct. Throughout all of the marijuana statutes, the Oregon Liquor Control Commission is directed to not inspect primary residences. And in the dash 7 amendments to House Bill 2198, those tracking provisions don't contain this language. So this language is only here with respect to conducting inspections and investigations. And I believe I know the reason. However, the contentiousness of it makes me, I think it might be more appropriate if somebody from the commission came up to address that question, the justification for it.
Madam Co-Chair, so I just want to put on the record, under the dash 23s for 1057, as it stands right now, we could in fact have regulatory specialists going to a primary residence to do inspections and investigations.
Correct, for these registrants, correct.
All right, thank you.
Any other questions? All right, so thank you, Mr. Mayor. I don't see additional questions for you. Mr. Marks, well, actually, we're gonna call you back up in a minute to talk about 2198-7.
Madam Chair,
yes.
Maybe it would be good to have someone from OLCC
yes.
Come up and
yes.
address that.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. And we'll call you back up in a minute. Welcome.
Committee, for the record, Steve Marks, Executive Director, OLCC. With me is Jesse Sweet. So as I recall, and I know there was a great deal of sensitivity around the speak directly to the home inspection. As you recall, we had a work group that negotiated around prior to session, trying to look for pulling the systems together, negotiated around it. And I think at that time they made the case, like the case you heard 2 years before. There were small growers that used their households in their operations, and so that was an item negotiated in so that small growers that didn't want to build extra facilities or shed or others could designate a part of their primary residence within their grow canopy operational space. That would be at their direction, and with that they would subject themselves to inspection by OLCC. So that came out of that work group's process. Certainly understand all of the sensitivities and discussions that were had on this 2 years before.
Thank you. So what I am hearing you say is that if a grower who is a registrant who's growing above the threshold below which registration or licensing is not required affirmatively designates a portion of their primary residence as the space in which the registered grow is happening, then pursuant to the enforcement and investigation mechanisms that are part of making sure the law is followed, it would be permissible under this provision to look in that designated grow site affirmatively chosen by the registrant.
That's Chair Leininger. That's exactly it, and it would be their choice to come into the system in that way and be subject to that part of their residence being a part of the inspection as their grow site.
Okay. Follow-up questions? Any other questions for OLCC as to the dash 23s? Senator Przanski.
It's my understanding of my belief in reading through the Dash 23s. We're actually going to be shifting everyone under this draft that are in the medical marijuana program and requiring them to be licensed under OLCC. If I remember correctly, I think I read it was ORS 475B.070, which is the that everyone's going to have to go into that license, or am I misreading that? Because it seems like it's a catch.
You know, Mr. Mayor, I'm going to actually invite you to come back up also, make sure that we have the right people answering the right question, and invite you actually, Mr. Mayor, in the first instance to respond to the question that Senator Przanski posed, which, if I heard it right, is, does the Dash 23 require all producers to become OLCC licensees? And I think the answer is no, but why don't you illuminate?
Chairs Leininger, Burdick, Senator Przanski, no, the Dash 23s do not require everybody to become an OLCC licensee. They require somebody to make an election as to whether they want to remain in the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program, in which case they'll be subject to tracking. So it'll be the same circumstances under which they're currently regulated, with the exception that they would be subject to tracking, or to choose to go into the licensed program. And I think a lot of what's written is to basically create a mechanism by which the people who choose to go into the OLCC system and become licensed by OLCC, there's additional time for processing those licenses and allowing those guys to move into that system versus just being subject to tracking. I believe a lot of the schedule stuff that I was talking about is around that.
So, my understanding is that the intent of the Dash 23s is not to require people to obtain OLCC licensure, but rather to require all growers that produce more than 12 mature plants and can have up to 24 immature plants to use metric for tracking. So either as a OHA registrant, because based on feedback that we heard earlier this session from community members, there was a strong desire to retain OHA's supervisory authority of registrants, but you'd have to use metric as an OHA registrant, or if one chose to be licensed under the OLCC mechanism, you would use metric as is currently required as an OLCC licensee. Does that capture it correctly?
Chair Leininger, I believe that is a correct, that is a correct statement of the Dash 23 amendments.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks for the clarification.
Other comments, questions? Okay. Well, seeing none, thank you, OLCC folks, for being up at the witness table right now. I am going to actually close the work session on Senate Bill 1057 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2198. And Mr. Crawford, Mr. Mayor, if you could stay where you are, sorry to do that to you. it's funny how everyone quickly moves away from the witness table.
Chair, I was trying to run away.
Yeah. Mr. Crawford, why don't you please give us an orientation, and then we'll ask Mr. Mayor to walk us through the Dash 7 amendment, which reflects quite a lot of new thinking and work from the time that folks who are tracking this last heard about 2198.
Madam Chair.
Yes, please. Before
we get started, I just want to make it clear to the audience that the testimony tonight is only on the Dash 7 amendment,
right.
not the underlying bill.
That's right. Thank you for that clarification. So, Mr. Crawford, please go ahead, and then we'll turn to Mr. Mayor's introduction of the Dash 7s.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2198 first came before you on March 14th when you were being asked to consider the Dash 1 amendments. This bill is now coming before you, you being asked to consider the Dash 7 amendments. We have Deputy Legislative Counsel here, Mr. Mayor, to explain those amendments.
Chairs Leininger, Burdick, members of the committee, my name is Mark Mayer, Deputy Legislative Counsel. I prepared these amendments last week for the requester. Before I go into the specifics that I think are important to maybe take a look at, a hard look at, I'll just mention real quickly that the overarching idea of this is to create a commission within the Oregon Health Authority, not a brand new agency, but a commission within the Oregon Health Authority that will adopt rules and take on other functions as the commission sees fit, and perform those functions within the health authority. The health authority will continue to administer the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act, but at the direction of this commission. So that's the overarching idea, and that's what about 95% of this particular draft is about. With that in mind, I'll go ahead and I'll point out some important pieces to look at. On page 2 of the dash 7s, this is the section 2, that basically creates the commission. And the most important thing here for me as a drafter is that it is being established within the Oregon Health Authority. This is also where it lays out the commission membership. And I won't go into detail over the commission membership at this time, but this is the section you need to look at in order to see the commission membership and what, you know, who is going to be on this commission and making these decisions. A lot of the language that's coming up is boilerplate, the type of language that we typically create when we're creating a commission. I'll skip over some of that. On page 4 of the dash 7s, section 6, this is the section that sets out the primary functions of this commission and what it's specifically going to be doing. Most important, again, to me as the drafter, is that subsection 1, this commission is going to adopt all rules necessary to administer the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act. Subsection 2, it is directed to delegate to the Oregon Health Authority duties, functions, and powers related to the administration of the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act, the delegation of which the commission deems necessary to achieve the full purposes and effect of the Medical Marijuana Act. So, you know, again, that's the real dividing line here. This is a rule-adopting commission for the most part, but it will take on other functionality as it deems fit, as it deems appropriate. Page 5, section 6A, there is an annual report to the Legislative Assembly. Excuse me, biennial report to the Legislative Assembly. Page 7, section 12, medical use of cannabis fund. If you flip over to page 8, there's some important language here. First off, the commission will deposit all fee and penalty monies collected underneath the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act into this fund, and then all monies in this fund are continuously appropriated to the commission for the purposes of administering the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act. So all fee monies will be used to pay for the act. Section 13 is some clarification language about designated caregivers being able to grow for registry identification card holders. Section 14 is a very important section to look at, I think, for policymakers. This one, underneath this one, a grower may transfer up to 25 pounds of usable marijuana to a OLCC licensed processor or wholesaler per year. So if you're a medical marijuana grower, 25 pounds per year, you can transfer to one of those two license types, not to retailers and, of course, not to producers. Section 14A, this is the other tracking language. And the idea behind this language, a lot of it is the same. It does not contain the schedule, and it does not contain the funding mechanism. What it does contain is it contains directions to the Oregon Cannabis Commission, this brand new commission that the bill, that the amendment creates, and the Oregon Liquor Control Commission to enter into an agreement and then to address through that agreement three things. First, who's going to be subject to tracking? Second, a schedule by which who's going to be subject to tracking will be tracked. And then third, the sharing of costs associated with implementing the section. So, you know, who's going to pay for it, what amount, that sort of thing. It's all going to be done pursuant to intergovernmental agreement. And then I think the final thing to point out with respect to the tracking in this bill is that it specifies, A, no inspections and investigations of primary residences, which obviously we already covered. And then it also specifies that marijuana grow sites may not be required to report inventory more than once per month unless there's a transaction. When there's a transaction, they would be required to report it underneath those circumstances. So those are the main parts of this bill, I think. Are there any questions?
Yes, sir. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I guess having been part of the transportation modernization package and looking at all the different ORSs that ODOT is required to report back to us, I have a little bit of concern with Section 6A on the idea of reporting back to the legislature on September 15th on the even-numbered year. And I get it that it's to the Legislative Assembly, so it's all of us. But I don't believe all of us care. I mean, I'm just being really candid. I'm thinking, could we narrow that down to just one committee or two committees? And I don't know if maybe judiciary might be the right place for it to go. I mean, to be real specific about it. And that kind of just narrows it down and makes it easier for the report.
Okay. Thank you. Thought? Additional, do you want to speak to that? Or I think it's a good policy comment. Great. Additional questions? And then we're going to ask Senator Pozanski to speak either from the dais here or go forward to the witness table, whatever you prefer, as the one of the conceptual authors of the provisions. So any other questions for Mr. Mayor? Okay, I think you're all set then. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Senator Pozanski, would you like to speak?
Mark, before you, I know when you've closed on the other, I do want to get clarification because the question I asked regarding making certain that everyone didn't have to become a licensee, we can do this offline, but I think it needs to be on record. On page 7 of the 1057-23s is section 19, and that's the production, processing, and sale of for medical purposes. And it's the new sub 1 that starts on line 2 where it says all produce marijuana for medical purposes, a marijuana producer that holds a license. What I'm hearing is that these are individuals that are I guess, in the OLCC system by choice, coming out of the medical arena, or they're in the commercial and they want to get to a point of where they can produce for medical purposes, and that is what refers back to them having the license under 070.
Chairs Leininger, Burdick, Senator Pozanski. Correct. What you're looking at specifically is the section of law that empowers OLCC licenses to engage in medical business.
Okay.
And it actually doesn't affect registrants. It's that specific area that addresses.
It's those that are in the OLCC system as compared to those in the OHA system.
Correct.
Thank you for the clarification.
Great. So with that, I think that we can excuse you from the witness table. And Senator Pozanski, I'll invite you to either come forward to the witness table or speak from the dais if you have any additional introductory remarks or kind of orientation for us about the Dash 7s.
Yeah, I'd be glad to speak from here. I think what I'd like to do is just acknowledge the individuals that were part of this group. Yes, my name's there as the requester for the draft. But Senator Cruz, myself, Representative Wilson, and also Representative Helm participated at some point during the discussions as to what we put forward. The Dash 7s represent an opportunity for us to ensure that the medical program stays intact, that it does, in fact, have a premise of having, in this case, a commission, a governing body that actually is going to be looking out for the benefits of the medical program and those who have been under the medical program, as compared to seeing what we've seen in the last year to 2 years of a significant shift of individuals leaving the medical arena and going into the OLCC arena for multiple reasons. And for various reasons, we felt that it was important to establish a commission that would be more responsive than what we, many of us, feel that OHA has been for the medical program under the OMP, and that this would give an opportunity to maintain a continuity that was given to the voters to consider when Measure 91 was voted on. And if you remember, it said specifically that we were not going to be having an adverse impact and effect on the medical program. And I would say that we've heard a lot of testimony. We've seen a lot of evidence that what has happened through the legislative process in enacting and implementing Measure 91, that we have had a significant impact on the patient-grower relationship and such. And so I would open this up for one discussion for members here that have questions about it, as well as for my colleagues that were part of the small work group who may want to add additional statements besides what I've set forth. It's really is an opportunity for us to maintain the distinct difference. The last thing I guess I'll put on the record at this time is that knowing that there's a new perspective in the federal administration, that we felt that it was imperative that we take the steps to ensure that there was a separate and distinct program for the medical program, and that it didn't somehow get confused or blended into a recreational program.
Additional comment, and I do want to thank Senator Przanski for taking the lead on this for those of us who were in the work group. But we thought that it was incredibly appropriate that we create this commission and give the commission the authority to deal with the details that we don't think is appropriate probably in this setting to do. And so that's why we set it up the way it was, so that, there were some of us on this committee, Madam Co-Chair, who one of our primary objectives was to protect the integrity of the medical program, and we think this is the best way for us to accomplish that.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Yeah, Madam Co-Chair, thank you. I think all of us have slightly different reasons for wanting to preserve the medical program. When I reflect back probably a month ago, some of the concluding words in this hearing had to do with the patient, and that is, what about the patient? And that actually got me thinking. In fact, that day when I heard that in committee, as some of the final words of our committee session that day, I spoke to a couple of our members and I said, you know, given the direction that I feel we're going, and that is a consolidation under OLCC, I'm not satisfied the patient is truly going to be taken care of, not in the way the patient has become accustomed. I know that some of the medical program has been farcical. I understand that. And we also understand the problems with diversion that we've had out of the medical program. But this gives us an opportunity to look at the will of the voters on Measure 91 when it was do no harm to the medical side. I think we kind of woke up along the way and said, wow, we've done a lot of harm to the medical side. We really have. And so let's get together and try to restore the medical program to what it could be. Let's do one better. And then the state police report came out, and we took a look at that. Whether fact or fancy, I don't know, but I think it did point out something important, and that is the fact that there is some diversion, perhaps significant diversion, out of the medical side. Let's give them an opportunity to sell into the system and not sell to the guy in the pickup down the block. I just think that there is a way to preserve the integrity and the history of this program, and I just do believe that we can do it better by taking some thoughtful time here to try to doctor the ills that that program has had over time. I think this is a great way to do it. I think it's a great platform. I think it's been a way of life to a great extent in Josephine County for years. These people forever have been working on cultivars and specific strains to aid patients. And I don't think that's going to happen under a consolidated program. And so, in short, I just think it's possible to do the medical program better. It's going to have to, the medical program is going to have to realize, and the patients and the growers are going to have to realize to a certain degree, all things move on. Things have changed. They certainly have. And that program needs to respond to some of the realities in the market today and in the world today. But I think that with the cooperation of those people in the program who will help us out here in trying to preserve their program, we expect them to help us out. We can come up with a program, we can retool a program that has integrity. I think we can do that.
Thank you. Would you like to say something, Representative Helm?
Of course. Thank you, Madam. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I thought I'd just say a couple of words about the provision that's a little bit new to the discussion about allowing medical growers to transfer up to 25 pounds to a processor or a wholesaler. And this is not my idea, and it's not a new idea. It's been circulating since 2015. But it just never captured our imagination on the committee, and I never saw the right time for this idea to come to fruition. But the idea comes out of in part, what we saw this past harvest season, which is when you don't provide an easy and clear route for small medical growers to get their product into the market, they start selling it back into the black market. And that's exactly what we saw this past harvest season. I know you heard the stories. I heard the stories. There was the news about how no one's crop was going to pass the testing went like wildfire through the communities, and they started selling their products without testing, both in-state and out-of-state. In part, in my opinion, that's what caused some of the shortages that we saw that were blamed on the testing system. It was actually the fear of failing the test that was the problem, not the testing labs themselves. And to my mind, that was a circumstance of being of having a system where it was too hard to legally sell into the legal system, and you had flight from it. So there, we're working at cross purposes to ourselves by making it too difficult. So here we have the potential to allow the commission to, through rule and through guidance that we already have in statute here, to allow that up to 25 pounds to be sold, not to the dispensaries where we can't really keep track of it adequately, but through pinch points in the system. Wholesalers and producers, there are just not that many licenses. And the idea is that the commission would adopt rules that place the responsibility on the wholesaler, for example, to do the testing and maybe pay the taxes and provide a back end on the tracking so that we both have some tracking of the growers themselves, as proposed here, but the wholesaler would be required to account for that too. And I think that gets to this issue that we haven't ever really been able to get our arms around, which is how do we prevent that leakage that we know is happening, that has historically been the source of people's money, and it's hard for them to make the transition unless we give them a clear and easy route for their legal product to get into the marketplace.
Thank you for that comment. And Senator Brzozinski, you have an additional comment.
I guess kind of wrapping up before we take public testimony. You'll notice that this is a bipartisan approach, both parties on each chamber represented in the group. And we have, in fact, we sat down with some of the advocates and have expressed to them the need, and they understand, for a matrix system to be part of this as for the accountability. And we feel that what we have in place will adequately do it, and will do it better than what is currently in the on the medical side, but not be as stringent as we've seen on the retail side until that additional excess is brought into that market, and then it will go through all the controls and all the factors as just anything else would be that was started at that at the growing cycle in the retail side. Thank you.
Madam Chair, if I could,
yes, please.
Yeah, just one more comment based on what Rep. Helm had to say, and you were incredibly valuable in this process. Diversion is going to happen. There's no way we build a system that there won't be diversion if somebody wants to. What we're attempting to do here is make it easy and affordable for people to do the right thing, with the assumption that if we allow them to do the right thing, they will. And so that is what we're setting up here.
Okay, thank you very much. I am now going to, we're going to have some invited testimony, and then we're going to move into the speakers who are lined up. I would like to invite forward OLCC representatives and also Andre Orso of OHA all to come forward right now. The question that, and then after that, I'm going to invite forward some public safety representatives, Rob Bovette and Mr. Jeff Koons. And what I'd like to have you speak to, please, is any concerns that we're in the question, you know, we're in the probative stage of looking at this new amendment, which just came out, I think, quite recently. Are there any questions or concerns that you see in terms of administration of this, or how there would be collateral consequences that affect the OLCC regulated market? For example, I think I heard Senator Przanski allude just now to the idea that the metric system would be used in the Dash 7, but perhaps to a lighter degree or something than under the OLCC side. I'm not sure exactly how that works, but if you could speak first, OLCC folks, to concerns or questions you have, and then Mr. Orso, you also, and then we'll go to the other invited testimony, and then we're going to work through folks who've signed up on the list.
Very good. Chairman Leiniger, members of the committee, I just want to speak, I think, specifically to tracking itself. We have been an advocate for...
Oh, you need to say your name.
For the record, Steve
Please.
Marks, Executive Director of OLCC. My apologies. We have put on the record many times over that we believe that we need to track the marijuana coming in our system to ensure the integrity of the system. And as Representative Helm just described, that 25 pounds coming in, there have been at least two sets of amendments over 2 years that we've looked at that would allow product to come into the system. Now, what's unique here is the point at which it's coming into the system. But that is an opportunity for inversion if you don't have tracking. We have said we wanted, from the earliest stages, right, that the recreational system should track its own product in its system and validate that it was produced inside the OLCC system. So aside from that, and that's sort of the policy, larger policy reason there, one system has, you know, one set of rules. Who's going to make the rules up between these two systems? You're using that cannabis tracking system. We are now in the process, as directed by you, of doing the medical bump up. We will be directing Franwell Metric to make changes in our system, on our contract, to accommodate patient sharing directly out of the bump up canopy that has been provided. So, you know, harmonizing the way those things happen between, I'm not quite sure if it's the new cannabis commission or who's going to be pulling those parts of resolution together. I know we certainly have a role through agreement in this process. But I think then if you have differences in the way those things are done, you have more confusion. Certainly if we have the responsibility, we have more training to two different ways the medical product may be tracked, both at staff level with licensees, and I think the public who's kind of they know about the history of the medical system. They know we have recreational, but the interface of the two is definitely confusing to the outside public, to public officials, to law enforcement. Also, then if the data is going to be of more utility to us to maybe prove up to people who are peeking under the hood looking, federals, you know, we want to make sure, or I think we would want to make sure that we have alignment of the data so we can show in similar ways what's being produced inside the legal systems in Oregon. And then there's this timing issue. How long before this medical tracking, the board that devised it is going to be ready to do that tracking. When is that coming? Is that 3 months, 6 months? And I know there's some dates in the memo. I'm sorry I don't have them retained yet. I think there's some cost effectiveness to fully utilizing the system we have in place. I think we've proved up in terms of our participation with the user communities of the system that we're willing to work very hard to make those interfaces and that product usable. Certainly we would do this. Yeah. We've already had discussions about how can we make the tracking interface simpler for sharing out to patients on that product with our contractor. So we just are very concerned that we have control, and control is the word here, of tracking from the grow into the system and just accounting for it as it comes into one of our licensees, I think, is incomplete from the vision that and the principles that the commission originally expressed on this. So with that, I'll conclude my testimony.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Sweet, do you have testimony to add from the OLCC standpoint?
I'll yield my time.
Pardon me? Okay. All right. Mr. Urso, and then we can have questions of this panel afterwards. Sure.
Madam Co-Chairs, members of the committee, Andre Uso, manager of the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program. I apologize, I haven't had some time to digest the Dash 7 amendment yet, but I can probably address some concerns that I have from a very high level at this point. First of all, I would concur and defer the concerns related to tracking to my colleagues at OLCC. They're very knowledgeable in the CTS system and metric and are aware of the issues that are presented there and how to handle tracking and control for issues related to diversion. So I would defer to them on those specifics today. My comments, I have three specific comments from a high level on the Dash 7. First of all, the idea of a commission with rulemaking authority resting within the Oregon Health Authority, I'm not sure how that would play out with OHA leadership. I would have to discuss with them and get their input on that. There are advisory boards, a public health advisory board within OHA. It does have advisory structure and not rulemaking structure. So I'm not sure how, I guess for lack of better terms, a power play between a commission with rulemaking authority and then an agency with all of its internal processes and procedures and its own employees, how that would match and how conflicts would be resolved. Would there be DOJ counsels for the commission, a DOJ counsel for OHA? Are those matters going to be resolved legally through internal processes? I just don't know how that's going to play out. Secondly, the issue of public health funding that's currently coming out of OMMP that is not addressed in this bill, that's something that would have to be resolved and addressed. I don't have an opinion as far as either way, but I would say that OHA definitely needs the funding. And the third would be that Section 14A, as Mr. Mayer has described it, there would be an IAA which would hash out a lot of the major issues that are not already elicited in the proposed bill language. So then that again results in, you can imagine, maybe a drawn out interagency agreement process between the Liquor Commission and this new Cannabis Commission where there is lengthy discussions and debates about how a product would be tracked, the schedule in which we would arrive at, the costs, all the devil's in details here in these agreements. And if there's more guidance in this bill, I think that can help the two agencies rather than leaving it in such an open-ended manner. So I'll conclude my comment with those very general issues that I've brought up, and I can try to answer any questions that you may have.
Great, thanks. And recognizing that we are all just getting acquainted with the bill, so thank you for making your best effort. It looks like Senator Przanski, you had a question.
I've got a couple.
Great.
So, Steve, I'm not sure if you've actually had a chance to look at the Dash 7s in any detail. Have you?
No. Madam Chair, Senator Przanski, not in great detail. I know sort of the sectional divisions, but have not studied them myself in great detail. I do know that we had, you know, the tracking system in it. The rest are, you know, policy decisions, and we'll certainly provide our input and advice on, but the tracking system is one part of the system that we feel is the gold standard of keeping our system coal compliant.
So I just want to make certain that on the tracking part, because I hope that when you have an opportunity to go through it, you'll see that the tracking that's proposed in the Dash 7s is actually your tracking. It is Matrix. And so we're going to use the exact same system. All it's going to do is basically not have, let's call it the bells and whistles of having security cameras and requiring mom and pops to have that type of investment in there. So they will be doing the tracking that they are required, or the reporting, I should say, that they're required under OHA system, but we're going to put it into your system. So it will be from ground zero. They will then, at some point, be showing where there's change in their inventory. They have to report every 30 days, unless there is a change. In my understanding, Matrix works that way, too. It's transactional. Whenever there's a transaction that occurs, you make a change, or you make a an update. So they will be doing it at least every 30 days, if not more frequently. When they get into harvest time for outdoor growers, you'll see that. So at some point, if they choose to take excess and put into the OLCC system, it will have been tracked to that point. And then at that point, they will make a transfer to either a wholesaler or a producer. And that would be noted that they're moving, let's just say, 25 pounds mm-hmm. into that system. So we believe that we've actually have accomplished what you would need to be able to track it from one, from the point of where it or its origin to the point of where it comes in and is going into the OLCC system for future use. But, you know, the change, I would say, different is that the cameras are not there, but the metric is there. Does that help?
Representative, or Co-Chair Leininger, Senator Przanski. Yeah, that helps. I just, if that's the intention, and it's not to have the security requirements on it, and it is to allow us to do tracking and pretty much do it as the cannabis tracking systems prescribes, I would like to have the opportunity maybe to work on making that language clear. So that we could do that. We've always supported that notion and appreciate your intention here.
So,
thank you.
Follow up.
Go ahead, please.
So I hope that after you have an opportunity to be able to you know, assist us if you think it's not clear enough. I thought Mr. Mayor did a very good job in putting that down. Maybe we do need to cross another T or dot another I. And Madam Chair, I guess for Andre, the advisory boards, I mean, I can't tell you how many people I've heard from under the OMP program where OHA basically has these advisory boards. Advice is given, but it's never followed. It's never followed. And that's the perspective that many of us got very frustrated when we first started down this journey. And so that is why we felt that it was appropriate to actually have a commission within the organization. I mean, and the money that you're referring to, I mean, $18 million has been taken out of the OMMP program to play for other programs in OHA. I can understand why you need the money. I understand you want the money. And I understand that the co-chairs have done that. And my understanding, they're going to start ratcheting it back, where maybe only about $7 million out of the $18 million will be there in the next biennium. So please bear with us, but very much frustration for many people as to where you have advisory boards that are there in name, but they're never taken seriously, because that's the frustrations we've heard over the last three sessions. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Great. Thank you. Any other comments? Okay. Thank you three very much for coming forward. And now I'd like to invite forward two folks from the public safety sector, Mr. Rob Bovet and Mr. Jeff Coons. And then we're going to move through signed-up testimony. And if we run out of time, we are going to carry over Senate Bill 874 to a future meeting.
Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Rob Bovet, Legal Counsel, Association of Working Counties. Just a couple of quick points. And I have read the Dash 7 amendments, but I've only read them once. They're fairly lengthy, as explained. I do have a couple of concerns I wanted to share with you, and one kind of leads to the other. The first is about the proposed commission. As Mr. Mayor explained, the commission would have rulemaking authority. So it's not a rules advisory committee. It's actually a rulemaking committee, and I'm not sure how you work out those conflicts internal to OHA, but a bigger concern is they wouldn't be advisory anymore. They would actually be rulemaking, and its composition, the 10 members of that committee, don't look like any of the RACs that we've been familiar with. For example, when it comes to OHA or OLCC rulemaking, we have a law enforcement presence on those RACs. We have a local public health representative or two on those RACs, and none of those folks are on this commission. The commission is, I would suggest, maybe not quite as balanced as it might need to be. So I suggest you look at that. In terms of the tracking piece, I'm kind of partial to the one in the bill we previously discussed in the Dash 23s. I see the difference in the Dash 7s that Senator Brzezinski has pointed out. I guess another big one that I would highlight that brings some concern is basically it would be up to this commission to decide which growers were in tracking and which growers were out. And that really doesn't give us the solid answer to the new federal administration that we're tracking this stuff, because some will be tracked and some won't, based on the discretion of this commission that is set up. So those are at least my initial couple of concerns that I had when I first read this bill. And of course, from a law enforcement perspective, we're really interested in getting everybody in metric that can be in metric. With that, I'll stop talking and turn it over to Mr. Coates.
Thank you so much. Welcome.
Yeah, thank you for being here, Madam Co-Chairs and members of the committee. My name is Jeff Coons. I'm the Deputy Chief of Police at the Kaiser Police Department, and I'm here today testifying on behalf of the Oregon Association Chiefs of Police. A little bit of background about myself is I was a member of the RAC, and I worked with Executive Director Marks and Jesse Sweet, and both people from the industry and from people from law enforcement, the Sheriff's Association, and the District Attorney's Association, in creating what we think are a good set of very robust rules for the recreational side of marijuana in Oregon. And that's something right now that when you look at the Cole Memorandum, I do not believe we have on the medical marijuana side. I prepared some comments today to talk about the Dash 23 amendments. That's what I focused most of my time on this afternoon, reviewing those. I like the Dash 23 amendments, and I have looked at briefly the Dash 7 amendments, which Mr. Bovet just spoke to, and I have the same concerns that he has. There was testimony earlier that the commission would decide what's tracked or who's tracked and who's not. In law enforcement, we want everything to be tracked. Everything needs to be tracked. You need to look closely at the Cole Memorandum, and one of the highlights in the Cole Memorandum, which I know you're aware of, I'll point out briefly, is preventing the diversion of any marijuana across state lines. And right now, all you have to do is pick up the paper about once a week, and you see where law enforcement in the state of Oregon has made a major stop with hundreds of pounds of marijuana that are being diverted out of this state. Now, if that does not set Oregon up to be a big target for enforcement from the feds, I don't know what does. Just last night in Beaverton, there was a butane hash oil fire. There were over 200 pounds of marijuana found at that explosion. And I spoke with the investigators today, and they don't know where that marijuana came from. To the best of their knowledge, that individual was not a cardholder, and he is not a licensee operating on the recreational side. Wanted to point out briefly that our neighbors in Colorado are tracking medical marijuana. Our neighbors to the north in Washington are tracking medical marijuana. And California is set to implement their pilot program beginning this August, where they are going to track medical marijuana through each step of the supply chain. That's very important, each step, not just the end result, not just what's transferred to the recreational side. Each and every step, they're going to trace the medical marijuana. And With that being said, I'll just reiterate that leakage is a huge problem in the state. We have to get a control on it or the feds are going to step in. They make it very clear in the Cole Memorandum that if you do not have robust regulations overseen, it doesn't matter if it's recreational marijuana or medical marijuana. Either side, the Cole Memorandum doesn't care if it's medical or recreational. If you don't have robust programs in place and safeguards in place, you are going to become a target. I briefly wanted to reiterate what Mr. Bovet said about the proposed commission. If that is something that comes to fruition, I would recommend that there be either retired law enforcement or current law enforcement participating on that commission, somebody from the Sheriff's Association and somebody from the Oregon District Attorney's Association. And then I'll just end by saying if you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I guess, Jeff, either for you or Rob, since you mentioned California, I am curious because they have an interesting program of where they're going as they identify the quantity and the plant limits. They put that on the cards. I'm just curious your thoughts on that, on how that would help out law enforcement.
We in law enforcement need as much information as we can get our hands on. Right now, the system right now is not very transparent when it comes to the medical side. We basically can ask the authority, is this a grow location or is it not a grow location? Is this a card holder or is this not a card holder? It's difficult to get information, and if we want to be beyond reproach, we need to have a totally transparent system, both sides.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. Co-Chair Burdick.
Deputy Chief, I think I got that right. You said that you had prepared remarks on the Dash 23 amendment to Senate Bill 1057. If you're able to provide those on OLIS, that would be great. We had the public hearing last week, but I would welcome your comments in writing if you'd
okay.
be willing to do that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Senator Przanski.
Thank you. So, Rob, on the part about the makeup of the commission, of course, that can always be changed. What they're trying to do is get people that are involved in knowing and have knowledge on the medical side, since that is a program we've had since 1999 that the voters voted in 1998, which basically established that perspective. Regarding tracking, I'm not sure how it's worded to the point of where you're under the impression that we would not be requiring tracking for anything that wasn't within the mom and pop 12 plants or less growth, because that's the intention that we've had, and that seems like across the board we've had that. And so if there's some things that you think that needs to be better clarified, because it was never the intent of the four working members and those others that we're going to have certain people that were above the 12 plant to be tracked and others would not. Regarding the diversion, and Deputy Chief, I've heard your statement. I understand that there appears to be issues with the medical side, but would you also agree that there's also a diversion or can be diversion from the recreational side?
I would agree with that statement.
Yeah. In fact, what we do know is that right now someone could actually, who's under the license, report that they had a fungus on 100 pounds of plants or 100 pounds of product and basically justify that, and then it's gone because we have no tracking and no proper disposal of that at this point, if that's fair. So that could also be being diverted out of the system, correct?
Madam Co-Chairs and Senator Przanski, to elaborate on or answer your question about somebody reporting that they had 100 pounds of marijuana with mold and disposed of, and just disposed of it. It would be my understanding that once they report that to OLCC, the OLCC then has X amount of days to react to that, to either go inspect or to authenticate that there is indeed some contaminated product, and then after that time it could be disposed of. I don't think somebody can just simply write something off the books and make it disappear that easily. I think the rules are stricter than that.
Okay, that's not how it was explained to me, so maybe it is. And I appreciate you being here and participating your perspectives. It does seem that what we want to make certain is that we are doing the best we can
to divert. And I know from a law enforcement perspective, because of my job, that we'd love to have complete transparency, but the confidentiality that was built into the medical marijuana initiative specifically said that we were not going to allow for law enforcement to have transparent actions or transparency, direct transparency to the information, that they were going to be limited to what they could get as to whether that's a grow site or not. Because what we've seen is that, unfortunately, some officers, unfortunately, were doing requests that didn't seem to be in conjunction with an actual investigation.
Madam Co-Chair, if I could just address 2 points, and I appreciate those questions, Senator. I encourage you to read that paragraph, because I did see the limit for 12, not tracking those that are under 12. But the lead into that paragraph basically says the commission basically gets to say who's in and who's out above 12. Okay. So that will be the concern there. In terms of addressing transparency, I'm truly intrigued by Representative Olson. I hadn't thought about it before, but maybe there's something to be pursued there so you have some level of transparency on the card itself. Mm-hmm. That's intriguing to me.
Okay, any other questions for this panel? Okay, thank you both so much for being here. Really appreciate it. And now I would like to invite forward, I'm going to call forward some people who check the boxes of having traveled more than 100 miles to attend this meeting. I see that a lot of the folks who have checked that box are from Deschutes County, and I want to reiterate that the Dash 11s are not under consideration. You know, the Dash 11s to 1057 are not in 1057 at this point, the Dash 23s, nor are we talking about 1057. We're talking about 2198, and there's some work underway to try to reach a negotiated conclusion to the really important issue that folks in Deschutes County have raised. So I'm hoping that the Deschutes folks will speak to 2198 and issues that are there, with the understanding that there is some important work you've helped initiate on the issue of restrictions on farmland. Okay, with that, please let's have Ms. Shirley Morgan, Monica Piat, and Maria Water come forward, please. And then on deck, we will have Lance Piat, Bob Kennedy, and Carolyn Spicer. You can go in any order. Please state your name for the record. And I think that we've got, if you could contain your comments no more than 3 minutes each, then hopefully we can get through as many people as possible.
So I'll start. Good afternoon, Co-Chair Burdick and Leninger and committee. I would just like, my name is Shirley Morgan of the Citizens for Public Safety, Quality of Life, and Property Values. And I would just like to bring to your attention that on the last agenda that was sent out, revision 3 on Friday, April 21st at 9:36 a.m., which is the last one that I received, it did not show anything about a Dash 7. It only showed a public hearing on House Bill 2198. So we came prepared to give testimony on House Bill 2198, and I hope that you might consider accommodating our testimony since we drove for a long distance.
We sure will. Please know that 2198 in its original format is not under consideration. It's the Dash 7 that is. And in this stage in the legislative session, amendments have to be posted no less than an hour before a meeting. And what time was this one posted?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the Dash 7 amendments were posted Monday around, I believe, 3 o'clock.
So I know this is a difficult situation, particularly for regular people who are coming here to lend their voices, but the original Dash, the original 2198 is not a bill that is being considered right now. This Dash 7 is a gut and stuff. So out of respect for your participation in this civic process, we would love to have you give briefly your testimony. You've heard what the Dash 7 is about. So if you can confine your comments to aspects that are relevant to the Dash 7, that would be great. Thanks.
Thank you so much. We just want to thank the committee for taking on the challenge of attempting to regulate over 47,430 medical marijuana grows in the state of Oregon. We have no doubt that there are marijuana advocates who are trying to comply. But if you are not living next to one who isn't complying, you don't know what a living challenge that is. Many rural farming residents are retired and in their 70s or 80s, and it's unspeakable the kind of activity that's going on in some of these locations. And they're having to protect themselves, and they don't always have the skills to know even how to develop that. So in Clackamas County, as an example, we have over 3,448 unregulated medical marijuana grows. The three S's still drive the complaints: sight, sound, and smell. The prison-looking compounds, the noise, the traffic 24/7. We're seeing unreported robberies at these locations, guard dogs that are barking at all hours of the day and night, killing neighbors' livestock. There are over 46 marijuana complaints in all zones of Clackamas County, many still unresolved, and they have not seen any additional tax money for help. We support, and listening to the Dash 7, I would support a number of things in the Dash 7. We support House Bill 2198, combining authority for OLCC to register and regulate the medical marijuana program in the grows, the processing, and dispensary sites. But we are opposed to any efforts to restrict cities and counties from prohibiting ordinances regarding marijuana activity and anything that might remove the county's ability to opt in or opt out. It has been noted that the medical marijuana and the recreational industry has invested a lot of money. But I would also like to note that rural residents have invested their life savings in their properties. And we believe that that's important to take into consideration as well. And I'm going to skip to one last comment and close. I'm not going to get up on Senate Bill 874 for just this statement, but we'd like to commend Senate Bill 874, which requires persons working inside a marijuana business to report marijuana violation laws. But we wonder how it will be enforced and what consequences there are for not reporting a violation.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
And I want to note that we're not hearing testimony on 874 right now. I do appreciate you weighing in on that. And there's not currently a proposal to consolidate regulatory authority under OLCC. That was in an early version of 2198, but it is not on the table in the Dash 7. So thank you so much. Please go ahead.
Good evening, Chair Burdick and Chair Leininger and committee. My name is Monica Pyatt. I am a resident of rural Deschutes County. HB 2198, while the title sounds appealing in requiring over 1,300 unregulated medical marijuana grows to come into compliance, it also shows that there is much in favor of growers effectively doubling the amount of marijuana they grow, and I do oppose HB 2198 as it is written. We have lived in Deschutes County for over 22 years on three EFU acres next to 20-acre, 10,000-square-foot proposed commercial marijuana grow. The surrounding 28 lots within 1,000 feet have appealed this application in Deschutes County. Rural Deschutes did not vote to legalize marijuana, nor did we vote to turn this federally illegal plant into an agricultural crop. The legislature did. I support Deschutes County commissioners and oppose any attempts for SB 1057-11 to remove any of the current marijuana regulatory time, manner, and place regulations. Challenges in both medical and recreational grows include light pollution, helicopters hovering over crops on frosty nights to protect their crops, increased traffic on roads that are used for tourism and residents, and the skunk smell of pot.
So I'm just going to jump in that we're not considering the Dash 11, which is eliminating.
Okay.
So it would be great if you could make a passing reference to that for folks who are here to talk about the fact that they don't like cannabis growing on EFU land. Please know that that is not actually on the table right now. And if you want to make a one-sentence reference to that, great. But we've got a lot of people who want to testify about things that are actually live under consideration. So we're going to try to get to as many of them as possible.
Thank you. Our family owns a rescue and safety business. We pay state, federal, and county taxes with corresponding state and federal license numbers. Our customers use this gear to comply with NFPA and OSHA safety standards to protect their lives and the residents whom they serve. Why is the medical and recreational marijuana industry not held to the same standards. According to law enforcement, there is already more marijuana growing in Oregon than is used in the dispensaries. We currently have a lack of code enforcement, shipping cargo containers being used as fencing barriers, traffic with blacked out license plates at all hours of the day and night. Marion County has opted out of growing marijuana, and Deschutes County opted in with tight regulations. We're willing to fight for those regulations to protect our public safety and quality of life.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Go ahead.
My name is Maria Wadier. I'm a resident of Deschutes County, and this is my first time ever in the Capitol here. We've been here all day meeting with senators and representatives. And I am totally exhausted, and I'm confused, and I'm confused about the change in agenda. So everything that Shirley and Monica have just said, I would reiterate. We're having a great deal of problems in Deschutes County, and I know that's not what we're here to talk about tonight. So I guess the only thing I can say is that when it comes to HB 2198, allowing OLCC to change its name to the Liquor and Cannabis Commission, I mean, that seems to make sense. But I can't support the rest of the bill the way it's written. It seems very heavy on the cannabis industry side, and it doesn't seem clear at all. And I guess the only other thing I would say at this point is that the words farm crop that have been used in these bills is a little bit deceiving. This crop, this plant, is processed into a mind-altering drug, which is illegal under federal law. And I think Deputy Chief just mentioned, too, about the black market. And we're very concerned about the criminal element that's coming into Deschutes County, and there's a great deal of it. So I think it's going to take a lot of wisdom and intelligent planning from this commission to really, both on the medical side and on the recreational side, to make this thing work, because it is not working, and we oppose any change to the time, manner, and regulations that Deschutes County now have in place, and we do support our commissioners.
Okay, thank you so much. Yes, sir, Senator Przanski.
Madam Co-Chair, maybe we should make an announcement for those that are here on some of the topics that were not before us. The record's open, and so they may want to send written testimony to us on whatever those issues are. They'll be part of the bill, and we'll have it documented for you so you don't feel like you didn't have your opportunity.
Yeah, excellent. We did do that, Senator Przanski.
We have done
that.
Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you. Any other comments? Thank you so much. And now we will invite forward Lance Piet, Bob Kennedy, and Carolyn Spicer. On deck, we have Mike Kirkwood, Christine Everts, and Patty Adair.
Co-Chairs Burdick and Leininger, I can make this very, very quick, having seen what it is. First, I'd like to say that I looked at your hearing from last week this morning. I tried to look at it three times because I understand that the issues are certain.
Oh, yes, sir. If you could begin by stating your name for the record.
I'm sorry. Bob Kennedy, Deschutes County, near Redmond. So anyway, I looked and I understand that these issues are very complex. We came here prepared to talk about 1057. I understand that's off the thing. So I would just limit my comment to the fact that I would request that Amendment 7 of 2198 not contain language that would curtail our county's ability to manage our own affairs with regard to this. We do support the Board of County Commissioners and the process they've gone through, and we would hope that 2198-7 would not curtail any guidance that they have. So that's it. Thank you.
I want to compliment you. You know, as a person whose job or who is not necessarily to come here and give testimony, it's really hard. And as we defined for the preceding three people, some of the things that you thought were the topics on the table have evolved, which is normal for the legislature at this time of session, but might have taken you by surprise. So you managed to find a way to bring in the comments that you wanted to make into this new framework that we had described for you. And so thank you. And thank you all for being here. It's not easy, and we appreciate your engagement in the process.
Thank you. I tried to be brief.
It was great. It was
thank you for taking the time. All right, we have not seen Carolyn Spicer or Lance Piet. Are those folks going to sort of pass this time?
I'm Lance, I don't have anything.
Okay, thank you. All right, so if Carolyn Spicer is available and interested, she's up, as is Mike Kirkwood and Christine Everts. Thank you so much, everyone. Thanks for being here.
Co-Chair Burdick, Co-Chair Leininger, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mike Kirkwood. My company, EEK, is a recreational wholesaler with the OLCC, and we're also a licensed software developer with Franwell, the company that makes Metric. So we're very familiar with how the registries work and how the system currently works today. Briefly, I want to revisit our testimony from March 14th. We suggested 5 points. First, that the program should be merged entirely into being an over 21 medical program. Compassionate, not recreational. Get rid of all of the language that tries to split the program so that we can easily do the right thing for the medical patients and for the over 21 program at the same time. The language is very confusing across all the bills related to if we're talking about medical for the grower's sake and the patient's sake, or we're talking about medical in terms of medical grade product. It's confusing across the board. First, our second point is OHA growers should be able to opt in and sell registered product to the OLCC. So the -7 amendments, which we're in support of, from 2198, we agree with. We agree with the 25 pounds. And we also believe that wholesalers are in the best position to import packages. In our testimony, we show several diagrams of how importing can work and how Metric today has a mechanism for importing products from outside sources. Today, every retailer and every processor is allowed to opt in products from unknown sources the first time that they convert. The exact same software and system exists today and can be used to allow OHA to opt in to a wholesaler in the system. Third, make it easy for small farmers. Let the OHA rules exist for patient grows and land use like it does today. Fourth, we suggested setting up a marijuana marketing commission, just like the wine commission bill that's out in the session today. Fifth, focus all of our legislative effort on legal exports. Oregon isn't a big enough market for the product that we can produce. We have very excited, energetic growers, and we should be taking this as a competency to export it into the market. So finally, we're suggesting that we do, we are in support of the 2198-7 amendments, and we show in our testimony 4 different ways that the integration can happen between OHA and the OLCC, with the easiest one being let them import it in with the tool that already exists.
Thanks very much. Ms. Everts.
Thank you, Co-Chair Leininger. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Christine Everts, representing the Oregon Sun Growers Guild this evening in support of House Bill 2198 and the -7 amendments. The Oregon Sun Growers Guild is the leading trade association representing outdoor cannabis producers in Oregon who advocate for ecologically sound sun-grown cultivation, the medical patients they serve, and all Oregonians who benefit from clean and safe cannabis. We believe that sustainable sun-grown agricultural methods produce a superior holistic product for medical patients as well as recreational cannabis users. The Guild has a diverse membership ranging from very small medical-only growers to large outdoor tier two, licensed recreational producers. It's also worth noting that we have many medical grower members that are very interested in and presently preparing to move into the OLCC's micro-canopy program and are looking forward to working with the OLCC. OLCC, we appreciate the important work this committee is doing to ensure the vitality of both the medical and recreational systems in this developing new landscape for cannabis. House Bill 2198 in its original form heeds the clarion call to restructure the medical program, and now with the -7 amendments has merged elements of Senate Bill 300 as well as elements of Senate Bill 1057, also before you today. We respect and applaud the sincere efforts of this bill to address the unique needs of medical cannabis patients and their providers in this state. In particular, we support the establishment of the Oregon Cannabis Commission to focus on the therapeutic uses of this diverse plant. House Bill 2198 with the -7 amendments preserves the medical program as separate, but creates a governing body for OMMP that can truly modernize the program and build for the future, ensuring that Oregon can position itself as a national and international leader and have a distinguished future in medical cannabis. There are some pain points in this bill, to be sure. Merging medical and recreational under a singular tracking system will be difficult for the growers and the patients, both technically and financially. But with a strong cooperative partnership between the Oregon Cannabis Commission and OLCC, our hope is that it can be done in a way that doesn't disrupt the supply of medicine or create undue financial burdens for small agrarian growers and their patients. We would have preferred to see more resources and energy dedicated to fully implementing the existing OHA tracking system. But if it's the committee's strong preference to establish a singular system of tracking, we believe House Bill 2198 is the best approach available as it directs the newly created OCC to help oversee this endeavor with OLCC. We appreciate and support drawing a bright line at 12 plants for households with two patient
Thank
growers
you so
for themselves.
Much.
Thank you for your time.
Great. Any questions for this panel? Okay, thank you so much. Now we're going to invite forward Chris McAllister, Chelsea Hopkins, and Patty Adair. And on deck we have Caleb Hayes, Mike Rocklin, and Pete Kramer. And then after that we have Anthony Taylor and Cindy Etzel, please.
Good evening, Madam Chairs, esteemed legislators, and members of the public. My apologies for stumbling. I am in support mostly of 2198. There are several efforts.
Could you please identify yourself?
Sorry, Chris McAllister, Springfield. So I'm in support of much of the -7s, except for the portions that actually do the merger regarding tracking. I support the OHA measure if it was actually supported by an OHA that cared about the OMMP. With that being said, I feel under the Ogden memorandums, which were issued the same time as the Cole memorandums, but one spoke to medical, the other spoke solely to rec when they were originally comprised, I felt that that was a great way to make sure that should we do in prohibition across the United States, that we would have an ability to have a medical side model as well as a recreational side model. And when we put patients in non-controlled, non-banned areas, into the dispensaries, I had a problem with that, for the rec shops, rather. So they were putting patients before federal rules that were regarding vice use, not medical use. So whereas I support the commission, I think the ideas where we have people who understand cannabis, not just law enforcement, but rather the people who grow, the people who utilize, the people who take care of hospice people, the people who utilize it for more than just back pain, I think those are the people that need to be helped shaping our cannabis rules. With that in mind, I do support the commission over leaving it to anything to LLCC. I do not feel that liquor should be controlling medicine. Also, I think that if we're considering about protections, that we should consider the liabilities of having counties be able to opt out, cities being able to opt out about medical care. We don't see counties being allowed to opt out for chemotherapy. We don't see we don't put any other kind of medicine in these types of controls. It's a Schedule II in the state of Oregon, and our mayor in Springfield has policies that are guided by your hands. And so when we reached out to the Springfield Police in regards to any kind of amendments, they said the setup what we currently have with the medical doesn't need to be tweaked as much. Right now, our mayor can call and not be told whether or not a dispensary is open, but a police officer can. And so we have a different set of controls that need to be worked out, and I feel this commission actually has a better opportunity to do that. Metric is hard. I think that you're going to have a lot of really sick people not be able to work into it, whereas the OHA at least has some options to help guide people through. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Good evening. For the record, my name is Chelsea Hopkins, and I am the founding partner of The Greener Side, a retail cannabis store located in Eugene, Oregon. We were one of the first OHA dispensaries in Oregon and now have transitioned into the OLCC licensee.
We support House Bill 2198 with the -7 amendments. The -7 amendments establishes a new future for the OMMP. This gives hope to patients. OMMP has provided relief for thousands of patients for the nearly two-decade history of the program, and this bill gives it back its future. As one of the first dispensaries licensed in Oregon, I can tell you that medical cannabis patients are no different than any other Oregonians suffering from conditions and searching to find relief. They need hope. They need a future. Making sure the medical program has a future is terrific news for patients that are in it now and for those who will be in it in the future. The -7 amendments will place the OMMP under new leadership. New leadership will be required to evaluate the program and how it can better serve its patients and the caregivers and growers that support the patients and report back to the legislator on these issues. Reporting back to the legislator, also a part of this bill, has been needed for a long time. It is essential to holding programs and agencies accountable for shortfalls or praised for its successes. Reports on the status of access for patients, including costs and availability of medical-grade products, the effectiveness of strains and products available for mitigating symptoms, and keeping issues like the low-income patient program in the discussion are important for a program that the rest of the country looks to for guidance. In a time when studies are beginning to show overdose rates reduced in states with medical programs or that Medicare costs are coming down in those same states, it is important that the OMMP play a role in shaping policy to reflect these findings. Allowing OMMP growers to enter limited amounts of product per year into the adult use market will make these unique products available to us again. Having this excess come into the market through the wholesalers and processors is appropriate and will protect retailers from the extra work of intake and processing. It also takes a lot of cannabis out of the unregulated market.
Thank you very much.
To support the -7 amendments. Thank you.
Really appreciate it. Questions for this panel? Okay, thank you both very much. Next up, we have Caleb Hayes, Mike Rocklin, and Pete Kramer. And on deck, we have our final two speakers, Anthony Taylor and Cindy Etzel. Again, we're going to be holding over Senate Bill 874 so that it can have a fair opportunity for discussion at a subsequent meeting.
Honorable Co-Chairs Burdick and Leininger and Joint Committee, I'm Mike Rocklin, RNMN, CSBCOHN. I own MJ Enterprises, LLC, a cannabis consulting and advocacy company in Oregon. I've appeared before you many times on health advocacy since Measure 91 passed in 2014. I specialize in environmental health and safety and have managed complex medical cases involving pain with cannabinoid therapeutics. In fact, I have been collaborating with an Oregon-based family of functional medicine physicians in the state of Oregon. They're based in Tigard, and they provide individualized cannabinoid therapeutics with functional medicine. There are very few physicians that do this, by the way, and we have them in Oregon. I feel very lucky. We support House Bill 2198-7. Renaming the OLCC to include Cannabis Commission, and is expected the commission to be more proactive, collecting, analyzing, and producing meaningful data on current and foreseeable issues, incidents, and benefits of both therapeutic and adult cannabis use. Medical use and research of cannabis therapeutics has been oppressed for decades, and this newly created Cannabis Commission in Oregon is expected to be less bounded by obsolete and punitive narratives and more open to finding out where the data will lead us. That's really exciting to me. I've been looking forward to this for years. Thank you. This is a good bill. One primary concern that we have is statewide collection of real-time facts and data, and not just in our state but throughout the nation, so that emergent issues could be reviewed in a more collaborative and rational manner rather than reactive. It is hoped that the Cannabis Commission will collaborate with some of the current scientists in other states in order to improve timely communication and leverage scarce resources. Baselines of plant and product constituents, characteristics, and clinical information need to be standardized in order to determine if there are real potential harms or not to humans. There are significant preclinical studies and very high-quality clinical studies that demonstrate practical health benefits as well as less adverse effects over single-component pharmaceuticals, which we know to be extremely toxic and can actually interact with each other. So please pass this bill to the floor and help validate benefits and determine what actual harm might be realistically expected from cannabis. Oregon has a long history of craft and artisan growers, and we need to capture their knowledge about the therapeutic uses before it's too late. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Mr. Hayes.
Co-chairs Leininger and Burdick and members of the committee, my name is Caleb Hayes, and I am the director of Oregonians for Public Health and Safety. We are the fastest growing cannabis-related advocacy organization in Oregon because we stand for clean cannabis, free of contaminants, something Oregonians are absolutely demanding. Our members include labs, organic growers, and consumers and patients from throughout the state who stand for clean cannabis. I'm here in support of House Bill 2198 with the Dash 7 amendments because the bill is a good step for the industry in many ways. We applaud the creation of the Medical Use of Cannabis Fund. It is a great way to ensure that funds cardholders pay for the ability to possess a card actually go toward helping the program and to ensure the public health and safety of Oregonians who consume cannabis is protected. We hope that funds generated from this can be used to enhance enforcement and oversight of labs. Currently, there is very little oversight of testing labs. Opening the door to some labs with less integrity to play in the marketplace, jeopardizing the public health and safety of Oregonians. The amendment also allows for the commission to form a special committee on testing that could weigh in on what products should be on the list and at what levels. This would alleviate a lot of the concerns surrounding testing. Upon passage of a bill of this nature, we hope the agency and the commission would create a committee similar to what has been described here as soon as possible to help growers better understand what products are appropriate for use. Thank you for your consideration of our ideas. We hope to continue this conversation with legislators and stakeholders alike going forward. Please support House Bill 2198 and the Dash 7 amendments. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good day, committee members. My name is Pete Kramer. I'm from Mercy Center. I've been with the program a long time. I've seen a lot of changes. And I've seen a lot of money taken from our account and never reimbursed. And all these past years, after 91 been passed, we weren't going to change the medical program, but we see what happened. We're still a patient. We're still a grower. We're still helping the patients out. I agree with the Dash 7, but I think the cannabis industry should be one unit, the medical and the over 21. The medical has been here since 1997. 99. They didn't see Section 20 in our state constitution where everybody should be treated equally. That's the same section in the United States Constitution. Section 18, that all people should be treated equally. Citizens. Our forefathers fought the right for us to be here. Thank you for listening, and please read the Cannabis Connection.
Thank you. Great. We have three more people we're going to call forward: Don Moore, Cindy Etzel, and Anthony Taylor. Do we have any questions for this panel before these speakers leave?
Well, Mr. Hayes, I'd love to talk to you about this little advert someone gave to me. I won't do it on the record since it's not dealing with this, but it's kind of interesting that it seems like you're taking on the legislative branch for what the executive branch is doing, because this is rulemaking. It's not us making the changes. So maybe we can talk off record.
I'd love to.
All right, thank you. We're going to move on to the next panel now, and we have only about 7 minutes left. We have Mr. Thank you, Mr. Kramer, Mr. Morse, Mr. Taylor, and Cindy Etzel, if she's here. I'm not sure. Oh, yes, that's you. Great. Welcome. You may go in any order. We're going to ask people to stick to about 2 minutes each for since we're heading up at 7 p.m., but we sure appreciate you all being here and have a lot of respect for your insights.
Madam Co-Chairs, my name is Donald Morse, Director of the Oregon Cannabis Business Council. I'd like to speak tonight in support of most of 2198-7s. We believe that what we're seeing is another roundabout way of creating the unified market, allowing the medical program to sell into the recreational system, having them tracked, which we believe is essential to what's happening here in the state, and we think that above all else that needs to be done. But this starts to create that unified market. Where we differ from what's in the Dash 7s is with the committee that it creates. We all know, as Senator Przanski said earlier, that the advisory council or committee for medical marijuana has been little more than a toothless tiger for the last 19, 20 years. And we're afraid of two things. One, that this committee would become bogged down with the people that are supposed to administer what they're coming up with over at OHA, and that there is no system of conflict resolution or how things are going to be done. The other major concern that our organization has with this is that they would create rules and regulations that would or possibly counter or go against with what the OLCC wants to do as far as how things should be labeled or how things should be brought to market, etc. If they're going to be selling into the recreational system, business needs just one set of rules to follow, which is why we originally came to you with the unified system. It's very cumbersome for businesses, even the good actors trying to do the best work possible to keep track of who's doing what and what we're supposed to do under which agency. So I would ask you to consider a lot what these people in the committee would be required to do and what authority they would have. And it says a lot of good things are in there about what they can do, but as it pertains to business on a day-to-day basis, we have our issues. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Co-Chairs, members of the committee, I mean, just can't keep it brief. There's been a lot of stuff said in support of this bill already.
If you could start by saying your name. Thanks.
For the record, my name's Anthony Taylor with Compassionate Oregon. There's been a lot of positive things said about this bill this evening. There's been some current concerns raised. I think this has been a great hearing for all of this stuff. And I know that 2198 has had quite a circuitous journey through this committee so far, modernizing our program, our medical program, really reaffirms the state's commitment to patients and their ability to continue using their medicines. And the ability of the committee to study these things and report back to the legislature on such things as patient access and the cost of their medicines, the efficacy of the medicines in treating their debilitating conditions is really important, and it's been a long time coming, and I would hope that the committee can support that. A quick word about tracking. Medical marijuana being produced in this state is being tracked right now. The OHA spent $1 million on their tracking system, and although the participation numbers aren't what they would hope for or what was expected, they are being tracked, and so we anticipate they'll continue to be tracked under this system until such time as the changes happen. Perhaps no other issue facing the state's concerns about federal intervention looms larger than the fact that 80% of all the marijuana produced in this state is outside the regulated adult use system when it comes to marketing. And we think this is a big concern. And therefore, we really support the mechanism by allowing the medical marijuana producers to have access to the adult use system. I'm happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Etzel.
Cindy Etzel, Jefferson, Marion County. I want to thank the commission, gentlemen, for the work that you guys have done from last week to this week. Kudos to you for the preservation of the OMMP. And I mean that sincerely. You know my heart. And to keep it separate, it needs to be separate. OMMP needs to be under OHA. And on the 2198 measure, part of this I can agree with, other parts I can't. The tracking, there's our tracking system. We don't need to go into the metrics. On the grandfathering, there's grandfathering out there on farms. They need to be allowed to be grandfathered and not have to do the tracking that is being required for just having 12 plants, because it's not fair. And those people that you're growing for, they're not going to be around. This, it's eventually through attrition, this is going to come down to where it is on a rural farm, 48 or 20, 12 in the city, whatever it's going to be. So I don't agree with, I agree with what you guys are trying to do, preserve the OMMP through OHA. I know that there's a meeting coming up with OHA on Thursday with Mr. Andre. I don't know what he's going to be talking about over down in Eugene. There was some meeting about the new, I guess this is what it's going to be about. I didn't, on Thursday there's a meeting, Mr. From OHA is having a meeting about different things that are coming through. And so that was brought up. But I just want to say thank you. And I feel bad the people that do the bad things and make everybody else look bad, bottom line. Us that are doing the right thing, we're doing it for the right purpose. And darn it, please just let us be.
Well, thank you for your testimony. Just in response to the comment that you made about perhaps Mr. Orso doing a meeting in the Eugene area on Thursday, since that's the executive branch, the kind of the governor's branch of government, and we're the legislative branch, it could be that there's a meeting happening, but we wouldn't necessarily know about it. So sometimes that's confusing for people who come before us. But I bet that if you reached out to Oregon Health Authority's public information kind of designated person on their website, they could help you know what the timing is for that and the location. Any questions for this panel? Okay, seeing none, thank you so much for your input. Everyone, thanks for being here. We're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2198 and adjourn the meeting. House Bill 2198 and adjourn the meeting.